seat. Have a seat, everybody. Have a seat. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your welcome. And I am both humbled and privileged to stand before you today as the leader of the Democratic Unionist Party. We live in momentous times, but throughout it all, I am mindful of the support and the work of those of you in the hall, and indeed those of you who are supporters watching at home. Today I say a heartfelt thank you to the members, friends and supporters of the party for all that you have done over this past 12 months. Ultimately, politics is about serving the interests of the people and shaping the future for the benefit of everyone, and that must be our guiding principle. Now, of course, I want to add my personal welcome to Boris for joining with us and addressing our conference. Thank you so much. And I also want to put on record my appreciation to the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, for speaking at our conference dinner last evening. The DUP has and will continue to work with a range of parliamentarians on the national stage to further the national interest. I am delighted as well to have a delegation from Gibraltar who have travelled to participate in our conference this weekend, and it is fitting that we launched our Friends of Gibraltar grouping earlier on. I had the pleasure of paying a wonderful visit to Gibraltar in September and meeting with the Chief Minister, Fabian Picardo. Conference, I was enthused by the passion and the pride the people of Gibraltar have for their home and for their Britishness. We understand that passion and pride. And today, conference, we stand with the people and the government of Gibraltar at this difficult time. Now, we are fortunate to have Mr. Johnson with us this afternoon. He has strong electoral appeal, possesses youth and energy, and has a big political future. No, not you, Boris, but Councillor Peter Johnson, our newly elected representative in Carrickfergus. Let me again congratulate Peter and the East Antrim team on that by-election victory. We were all delighted when Peter gained an extra seat for the party, taking what had been an independent seat and pushing the DUP vote share in the area up by 12%, with a 40% first preference advantage over the nearest rival candidate. And Peter is not our only new addition at council level. I also want to offer a very warm DUP welcome to Alderman Sharon MacKillop from Causeway Coast and Glens Council. Sharon has this week left the TUV and joined the Democratic Unionist Party, and we're delighted to have you here today, Sharon. So, Sharon recognises that it is this party that delivers for the people, and it is this party that has the plan for the future. Now, today we meet at a time of unprecedented interest in our party. The Brexit negotiation is the current dominant political issue, and I want to thank all those colleagues who are involved in that ongoing work. I want to express my gratitude in particular to Nigel for his leadership at Westminster. And indeed, I want to thank all of my parliamentary team for the work that they do. But at this point, I want to take a moment to say a special thank you for the work that our member of the European Parliament, Diane Dodds, has undertaken. Yeah. Now, by the time of the United Kingdom's departure, Diane will have been an advocate for Northern Ireland in Europe for a decade. And I know, like me, you appreciate Diane's hard work and dedication on behalf of the people of Northern Ireland. Diane occasionally likes to remind us that it was she who joined the party first and later persuaded Nigel to join. For that alone, I am eternally grateful. But after her election in 2009, Diane established a public-facing European office, and her hard work and results for constituents were subsequently rewarded at the ballot box. Diane has provided an unparalleled service to the people of Northern Ireland, and I know that Diane will continue to play a very important role in the years to come. Conference, we stand at a crucial moment in the affairs of our nation. Our party has been entrusted with great responsibility as a result of the votes of the people across Northern Ireland. And with that responsibility comes a greater focus on our party than we have ever known before. People are interested to know our policy positions on a range of issues, and more than ever, the views of our party representatives are sought. So we must say what we mean and mean what we say. And so today I want at the outset to publicly address the issue of the Renewable Heat Incentive Scheme and our handling of it during our time in government. Now, this has been a very difficult period for our party in particular and for Northern Ireland politics as a whole. My motivation in government was always to do the right thing at the right time and for the right reasons. But the best of intentions doesn't make you immune from mistakes or misjudgments. And some of our past decisions and actions have left a lot to be desired. And I know that they have personally hurt and offended many of our members, voters, and the public. The public inquiry has been difficult for many individually and painful for the party collectively. No party would want to have all of its dealings exposed for all to see at a public inquiry, especially in the unique system of government we have, with the struggles and strains required to make it work. But I make no excuses. Today, as leader of this party, I apologise. As a party, we are deeply, deeply sorry for the mistakes we made and for the things we got wrong during that period. And I am determined our party will learn the lessons from the RHI and how government business was conducted at Stormont more generally. Now, there are many lessons to learn. These lessons, such as ensuring that we have the best people appointed to ministerial office and that all our representatives are clear on what is required of them. Lessons about special advisers, how we appoint special advisers, the number required, and how they operate and are regulated in government. Lessons for the civil service. There is a strong case for a fundamental appraisal of the Northern Ireland Civil Service and consideration of extending the home civil service to Northern Ireland. With technology, increasing complexity, and the emergence of new approaches, particularly those which intersect with the private sector, greater expertise is going to be required. We also have lessons about openness and transparency. Proper records must be kept, and we must recognise that greater transparency will add value to public debate. But you know, simply changing processes and procedures will not be enough. We must go further and ensure that we are engaged in an ongoing process of renewal and self-examination. Now, we will work hard to make amends and regain the support and trust of those who were upset by what they saw unfolding over this last number of months. And I know I also speak for many when I say that over the course of this last 12 months, there have been a number of other areas where our behaviour in our ranks has not matched the standards expected of people holding public office. So we must ensure that there is no repeat of such behaviour, and that those high standards we aspire to ourselves and that others rightly require of us are applicable at every level within this party. And while mistakes were made, there were many decisions taken by ministers from this party and other parties that we can be proud of and which ensured Northern Ireland kept moving in the right direction. Record levels of inward investment. Billions invested in new roads, new schools and new hospitals. But of course, much more remains to be done. Our country and our people deserve a stable government that will focus on taking decisions to make a real and meaningful difference to the lives of our people up and down our country. So, conference, as we look to the future, the Union is the best political, social, economic and cultural foundation to lay for the next generation. Why do I say that? Because through our union with Great Britain, we can contribute to and benefit from being a constituent part of one of the oldest democracies. We can contribute to and benefit from public services and safety nets many other countries cannot match. For example, our fantastic National Health Service. We can contribute to and have the protection of one of the largest economies in the world. And we can contribute to and benefit from a cultural wealth, the envy of the rest of the globe. And all of this was achieved, not by one constituent part of the United Kingdom alone, but by the efforts and talents of all of them. All of us. All of this was achieved through our common bond, the Union. And when we look back over our proud history and our common struggles, we see what we achieved was because we did it together as a United Kingdom. And that is what shaped our vision for leaving the European Union. Our commitment to the principles of democracy means that we must implement the referendum result of 2016, a national referendum with a national outcome. And our commitment to the common good for all parts of the United Kingdom means we must leave as one nation and that we must work collectively to make it a success. Our common history teaches us that the United Kingdom has and will continue to be a global success. We've done it before and can do so again. 2 years ago, at conference, I outlined five simple principles that would guide us in Brexit discussions and stated that talks would be tough. Seems like a bit of an understatement now, I have to say. But in particular, I said that the economic and social benefits for Northern Ireland within the United Kingdom are far more important than our relationship with the European Union, and that we would work with whomever in order to get the best deal for Northern Ireland at home and abroad. Now, consistently, we have indicated our objectives and our bottom line. They were simple, they were clear, and they were focused. We sought to do what was best for the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland in particular. We sought to provide the government with the room it needed to negotiate, but never to lose sight of what it needed to deliver. And most importantly, we publicly and privately indicated that we could not support proposals that would open the possibility of divergence in either customs or regulatory measures between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Our message was clear and it was consistent. Now, conference, I do want to acknowledge the hard work and determined efforts of the Prime Minister to secure an agreement. I believe she is genuine when she says she wants to see an outcome that does no harm to the Union and the internal market of the United Kingdom. However, this draft agreement fails her own key commitments. The Prime Minister has not been able to guarantee an outcome that eliminates the risk of the introduction of the so-called backstop arrangements. Now, on the one hand, we're told that the backstop would be the best of both worlds. And on the other hand, we're told we're not going to need the backstop. So, ladies and gentlemen, therein lies one of the many contradictions at the heart of this draft withdrawal agreement. In such circumstances, Northern Ireland alone would be aligned to numerous EU single market regulations, while Great Britain would not. Such a scenario, in the medium term, would inevitably lead to barriers to trade within the United Kingdom internal market. Let me be very clear, that is not in the national interest. know that there are many in the business community in Northern Ireland who are frustrated with the pace of negotiations and the politics around it, and who simply seek certainty. I understand their position. They have been clear that they would prefer what is currently on the table rather than a no-deal outcome. But for us, we cannot wish away the fact that the draft withdrawal agreement contains arrangements that we believe are not in Northern Ireland's long-term economic or strategic interests. Northern Ireland would remain part of the European Union's customs code, and as things stand, we would be sowing the seed of inevitable economic divergence from our largest market. In addition to the economic arguments, of course, we believe the constitutional implications of the deal cannot be ignored. The Democratic Unionist Party has never been afraid to say yes when it is right to do so, nor to say no when required. And we do not stand alone on these issues, with a large number of Conservatives, both those who voted leave and remain, not persuaded. Even Jeremy Corbyn isn't buying the sea border. But this party wants to see a negotiated and orderly withdrawal from the European Union. That's always been our position. We're not campaigning for a no-deal exit, nor do we want barriers to trade between Northern Ireland and our neighbours in the Republic. The choice is not between this deal and no deal, despite what the government spin machine may say. The reality is that if we are to secure a better outcome than is currently on offer, then the only option is to look beyond the current draft withdrawal agreement and work in the time ahead for an improved outcome. This party acted responsibly in the national interest to secure a government in 2017, and we will not be found wanting in our efforts to secure a better outcome, an outcome that does not leave Northern Ireland open to the perils of increased divergence away from the rest of the United Kingdom, an outcome which instead truly works to the benefit of all parts of this great nation. Now, the days and weeks ahead will be challenging, but we will continue to work in Parliament to achieve the best possible deal for Northern Ireland and the United Kingdom as a whole, guided by our principles and by our objectives. Conference, this party has come a long way since the days when Dr. Paisley and a small band of faithful men and women stepped out to form the Ulster Democratic Unionist Party. We are at the centre of political life in Northern Ireland and the United Kingdom. And we have the opportunity to shape the future, but we must ensure we translate our vision into a reality, and our unionism must deliver to the benefit of everyone in Northern Ireland. That is why, when the Confidence and Supply Agreement gave us the opportunity to contribute so integrally to our nation's affairs and deliver for Northern Ireland, we did so. And we insisted, by the way, on delivering for everyone in Northern Ireland. Let me give you a few examples which are not often talked about. If you know a child or a parent who has benefited through Sure Start or extended schools provision, those services are being funded through the money which we secured to tackle deprivation in the Confidence and Supply Agreement. Indeed, this year, and I'm really proud of this, an additional £10 million was able to be provided to improve mental health services. Ladies and gentlemen, delivering for the people we represent is what shapes our vision for devolution. We want to use the flexibilities that devolution provides to make Northern Ireland even better for all. And our vision does not end at the steps of Stormont. Our councils have larger budgets and staff teams than some government departments, and more powers than ever before. We see their untapped potential, and that working alongside a restored Assembly and taking forward city deals can only help drive Northern Ireland forward. At local government, our plan is not just for low rates and quality services, but also to make a meaningful difference to our society. Next May, voters will have the opportunity to elect new councils for the next four-year mandate. And the Democratic Unionist Party will field a strong team of local government candidates that will combine youth and experience, as always. We will offer voters the chance to return candidates to councils who will deliver quality services without overburdening the ratepayers. Now, the 11 new councils have almost completed their first full term in office, and I recognise that the creation of the new councils has not been without its difficulties, and none more so than in the west of Northern Ireland, where minority unionist communities have not been respected and where the equality agenda has done little to support unionist culture and identity. And as we move forward, we are determined, I am determined, to spotlight this issue and work to ensure that those who shout the loudest about respect and equality practice what they preach. Beyond local government, and we're all looking forward to getting out to canvass, beyond local government, we want to see the executive and assembly re-established on a sustainable basis. This party, the DUP, is a pro-devolution party. Since we became the largest party of unionism, the DUP has prioritised the establishment and maintenance of a working executive and assembly as its core political priority. This remains unchanged. I am as committed to devolution today as I was the day the institution stopped functioning. Because influence in London or power in Belfast was never a binary choice. In fact, both working together is when we can achieve the most for Northern Ireland. And devolution is good for Northern Ireland. While securing a stable administration is, we know, challenging, local decision-making by those who live here is by far the best option. Throughout 2007 to 2017, the DUP persisted through every challenge. Every time there was a substantive roadblock, we sought to work through each one and achieve a balanced agreement. Now, there were many times it would have been easy to walk away, but we didn't. Throughout, the DUP understood that dealing with the problems from within an executive and assembly was always the better course. And history will clearly show what we achieved in that decade was so much more than what had preceded it. The successes of the 10 years of an executive were generally characterised by the power of a series of decisions that flowed from locally accountable ministers. However, we cannot disguise the fact that too many of the big decisions were either avoided or started and never finished. Now, it took a decade of negotiations to create a stable executive. We now need 10 years of genuine change and of transformative government. The case for change is not limited to our politics and institutions, but change is required in how we work together with other parties in coalition and how that coalition works with the civil service. In any new Northern Ireland administration and during talks that might bring one about, I want all parties to have their mandates respected. And I will encourage the full involvement of all parties capable of holding ministerial office and want their contribution considered and acted upon on its merits. The DUP will step up its engagement with the Secretary of State and with the other parties to chart a way forward. And when Stormont does return, we need to demonstrate that it is with the intention of making the big decisions and that we will all operate with genuine collective responsibility. Clearly, there needs to be more certainty that the institutions will be robust and withstand political pressure. And a Northern Ireland executive should be established on the basis of a concise, agreed coalition plan for government. And such an agreement needs to address the fundamentals of our NHS, and our education system. In education, we must ensure more funding is targeted at the classrooms and that, where necessary, we do not shy away from taking difficult decisions if that is what is in the best interests of pupils and staff. On health, we prepared more plans for reform than actual reforms we ever implemented. And any new executive must be on the basis of the implementation of the Bengoa report, and we must ensure funding earmarked for health goes to health. We must also be conscious that there is a lack of cultural security, primarily for unionists, but also for others. We need a new cultural deal for everyone in Northern Ireland that respects difference and fosters understanding. Because it is in unionism's interest for those from all backgrounds to feel comfortable in a Northern Ireland at peace with itself. The result will be a Northern Ireland with effective functioning devolved government, making a tangible difference to people's lives. Now, as the largest party of unionism and the party of Northern Ireland, the mantle for change and delivery naturally falls at our feet. And we have never shirked the opportunity to lead before, and we will not do so now. The size, the breadth, and the depth of our team set us apart and give us confidence that we can rise to the challenges that lie ahead. And we have much work to do in the year ahead. Any successful political party wants the fullest possible range of voters and potential voters, and our broader responsibility to unionism must guide our behaviour. Supporters of the union, and I'm looking out at you all, come in all shapes and sizes. We always need to be seeking to attract the maximum number of voters to the unionist cause. And our overarching strategic task is to sell the benefits of the union and persuade a new generation of our people that it is a union that works for them as it has for us. We have the vision, the plan, and the team to deliver for Northern Ireland. Now is the time to learn the lessons from the past, look forward to the future and shape it with confidence and determination. I stand here believing that with our Westminster team, with our Assembly team, with our councillors, and with each and every one of you, that we can achieve it all for the people, for the country, and for the union. Let us keep focused as we lead, and let us never lose sight that we have a historic responsibility to lay solid foundations for the next generation. Conference, let us stand strong for Northern Ireland. Thank you.